The second case for oral argument this morning is Ted Delka, appellant, versus the Continental Casualty Company, appellee. For the appellant, Mr. Delka, we have Ms. Sarah Frankenstein, an attorney from Rapid City, and Mr. G. Vern Goodsill. I understand Ms. Frankenstein to be making the argument this morning.
I will be.
And for the appellee Continental Casualty Company, we have Mr. Ronald Hall, an attorney from Aberdeen. Ms. Frankenstein, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Again, my name is Sarah Frankenstein, along with my colleague Vern Goodsell and Jason Groves. We represent the plaintiff and appellant, Ted Delka. We're here today because we sued CCC as a co-defendant in this case originally, and the lower court dismissed CCC on summary judgment. We believe the court erred in dismissing CCC on all claims and as a party in this case, and there's two main issues to look at before the court this morning. The first is CCC directly liable to Delka without considering agency? Or in other words, did CCC commit negligence or commit some tort irrespective of the conduct of Greentree? The second issue is Greentree the agent of CCC? And as such, is Greentree's knowledge and conduct imputed to the insurer, CCC? Before I go into a brief recitation of the facts, CCC's counsel informed me that in my reply brief, I discussed testimony of Charlene Bird, and I attached her deposition transcripts as an exhibit. Counsel pointed out to me that those exact pages of the transcript had not been before the trial court. I do believe the issue had been before the trial court, and the issue had been discussed, both in general and specifically, so I'd like to address that. The portions of Charlene Bird's testimony that's attached have to do with Charlene Bird saying she's the safety administrator who worked for Greentree. She said, "No one ever sent me certificates of insurance. If someone sent it to me, I would have sent those out to truckers. I don't recall ever receiving any. If I got them, I would have sent them out." And basically, Ted Delka says, "I never received any."
So that's a disputed issue of fact then in this case, because they're saying they did send them.
That's right. It is an issue of fact. And I pointed it out in the reply brief because the response brief by CCC says it's undisputed that CCC sent these certificates on, and it's not undisputed. And we did bring it before the court in a hearing. Mr. Hall had brought a motion for summary judgment. It was withdrawn at the hearing, but Judge Macy invited comment regarding liability, and it was discussed at that hearing. And then we did bring in evidence that CCC had no contact whatsoever with truckers, so we do believe we've addressed this at the lower court level, and that's why it's included in my reply brief. As far as the facts, Ted Delka was a truck driver. He owned his own rig, and he became employed with Greentree Transportation as an independent contractor in August of 1999. After working there for 1 year, he had an on-the-job injury. He became disabled. He's got blood clots from his foot to his chest and is unemployable today. When he was signing on with Greentree to become an independent contractor with them, he had a conversation with Charlene Bird, Greentree's safety administrator, over the phone. Charlene Bird told Ted Delka that he needed either workers' compensation or what's called occupational accident insurance, or OAI. Ted said, "Well, what's the difference?" Charlene Bird said, "OAI is just like workers' comp." Ted enrolled in the OAI policy. Ted Delka was not given any piece of paper, any information that came from CCC at all. The only information he received about the policy he was buying came from Greentree. And what he received from Greentree didn't tell him what was included in the OAI policy, what the benefits were, or how much it cost. CCC has admitted that they have no contact with truckers to provide them this information. They say it's not our responsibility, and we have no such contact with truckers. We delegate that responsibility to Greentree. Greentree has admitted, as does Charlene Bird, that they are not licensed insurers.
So the policy was sold to Green Tree, not to your client?
I don't believe that we can say there was just one policy sold to Green Tree. In fact, CCC's own documents indicate that these are individual policies.
So did they even know Delka existed?
I don't know that they get a list of names. I know they get a number of truckers that are being enrolled by Green Tree for this policy. But they have no contact with the truckers whatsoever.
Do they get a premium from each trucker that Green Tree enlists?
They do. The premiums are deducted from each trucker by Green Tree. Then Green Tree forwards that premium on to their insurance agent, Southern States, which in turn forwards it on to CCC.
So if Green Tree has this relationship with 500 people, the same as they do with Delka, then Continental gets 500 premiums?
That's right. In the end, Continental benefits from the premiums, but they take upon themselves no responsibility in administering the product at all. Back to your question, Justice Gilbertson, in the insurance policy, if you look in CCC's brief under the tab ID and certificate, you'll see the actual certificate of insurance, and attached to it is a description, many pages. If you look on page 58, which is the certificate, it repeatedly refers to the insurance that Ted Delka bought as his insurance. It says, you are insured, your insurance will become effective, et cetera, et cetera. Then on bait stamp page 70, which is part of the certificate, it refers to the effective date of individual insurance. The next page refers to termination of individual insurance. So I do believe this is an insurance contract directly between CCC and Ted Delka.
But there's no dispute. This is a group insurance policy, right?
It is.
So how would this be different than, say, any large employer that provides maybe health or life or some kind of group policy, and there's never an insurance agent involved? You know, the HR person at the company, when you show up to work on the first day, gives you some forms and you sign up for this insurance or you reject this one. I don't see a difference here between that situation and what we have in this case.
Well, I think we have two differences. This group insurance policy is fully funded by the truckers. The employer does not contribute to the cost of the premiums in any way. The second difference is, as you stated, an HR person gives you forms, gives you documents. Those documents tell you what you're buying, who you're buying it from, who to contact if you have questions, gives you a phone number or a person's name to contact so you have the potential to contact a licensed agent. None of those documents or papers were provided to Ted Delka. The only thing he had to rely on to know what he was buying was what Charlene Bird told him audibly.
But that relates to the agency theory, not the direct liability theory.
I think it does also relate to the direct liability, Your Honor. CCC created this situation in which truckers, the insureds, are being explained benefits of their policy by uninsured people. Charlene Bird admitted she had no training whatsoever in insurance. She admitted she did not have a clue the difference between workers' compensation and OAI. So CCC created an environment where there was absolutely no other resource for truckers to go to find out what they were buying except from what Charlene Bird, a clueless, unlicensed person, told him about the policy.
That takes us right back to the general type group policies that large employers offer their employees all over, that are very common, where the person is not an insurance agent, it's an HR person, and they might be clueless and they might make a mistake, but the insurer isn't responsible for those kinds of group cases, at least not directly responsible.
I don't know if in those types of scenarios that you're referring to, whether those HR persons would be in violation of various statutes, but we've got some very specific Pennsylvania statutes and regulations that CCC was in violation of by using this group insurance scheme and bypassing any insurance agent in the process. We've got several statutes that create a duty that CCC must abide by. This court held in Albers versus Ottenbacher, that ordinances and statutes create a duty, and a reasonable person or a reasonable insurance company abides by the standards in the industry and the laws governing insurance. We've got several statutes that CCC violated. The first one is the South Dakota statute, because I do believe they sold a policy or at least an insurance contract of insurance to somebody in South Dakota, that being Ted Delka. SDCL 583092 says that no authorized insurer may issue or cause to be issued any insurance contract covering a subject of insurance that is resident to the state who's not licensed. So I think they violated South Dakota statute there. And if the court finds that Pennsylvania law applies, there's a similar Pennsylvania statute. In fact, it's even more specific, requiring licensure in more situations. The Pennsylvania statute says that if any insurer not only sells insurance to an insured, but collects premiums, they're an agent, which requires licensure. If they forward premiums to an insurance company, they're an agent requiring licensure. If they negotiate the insurance contract, under all those scenarios, under Pennsylvania law, you must have an agent's license and you're deemed an agent under those laws. There's other statutes handed down by the Pennsylvania Administrative Code, regs out of Pennsylvania, that were violated. One section of the insurance code deals with advertisements, and advertisements are broadly defined as any literature meant to be used by the buying public, by ultimate insurance. Those regs state that CCC, the insurance company, must maintain complete control over the content of those advertisements, and that's Reg 51.3. And those advertisements, if they're prepared by anyone other than CCC, they must be approved in writing by an officer of the company designated for this purpose. We know that CCC delegated the responsibility to GreenTree to create enrollment forms and to describe this policy. And we know CCC has admitted they never once sought to look at those forms or to approve them in any way. So we know they violated this regulation of Pennsylvania statute, and that clearly implies a duty upon CCC. We know that these duties also apply to group contracts, and they're not different from some other type of insurance, because 51.4, Pennsylvania reg, specifically discusses group contracts, and so does 40 PS 756.2 discusses group accident and sickness insurance under the insurance code, so we know that there's not some exception for group insurance schemes. We've got other Pennsylvania regulations that govern licensure and the manner in which insurance companies can go about their business. One says that when you're offering group insurance, you must furnish the policyholder for delivery to the ultimate insured, the employee, an individual certificate setting forth in summary form a statement of the essential features of the insurance coverage. That was violated by CCC as well, because at least conceivably, considering the facts in the light most favorable to Ted Delka, Charlene Bird says, I never received any from CCC. So we've got five or six statutes that CCC violated. All of those statutes create a statutory duty. So the court erred in finding that CCC had no duty to Ted Delka because this was a group insurance scheme. There really are two claims here. We oftentimes refer to the just like claim being Charlene Bird saying workers' comp is just like, or OEI is just like workers' comp. We've got a second claim as to overcharging as well. Sticking with the just like claim, the court never considered whether CCC knew or should have known that GreenTree was misrepresenting benefits. We argued this to the lower court. We didn't see it in his decision at all. So we didn't get a discussion of this in the lower court's record. But insurance companies do have duties to the insureds. We've talked about statutory duties. This court has held that insurers have other duties. They're created in other ways. They're also created by common law. They're also created by implication or operation of law. And they're created from a failure to exercise that care which a reasonable person or insurer would exercise under like circumstance. Well, what is it that a reasonable insurer would do under the same circumstance as CCC? Reasonable insurers would follow licensure laws. Reasonable insurers would provide insureds with paperwork. CCC didn't provide a phone number, an insurance agent's name, provided no pamphlets, no leaflets, no papers with CCC's name on it at all when Ted Delka was enrolling. All he knew was that it cost $125, because that's what Greentree told him, and it was just like workers' comp, because that's what Charlene Bird told him. A reasonable insurer would make sure their insureds know what they're buying, know who they're buying it from, have access to an insurance agent, and otherwise can contact the insurance company with questions. CCC created no enrollment forms. That was delegated to Greentree, even though the regs say all advertisements, which include all printed documents, must be authorized and approved by CCC. CCC delegated responsibility to an unlicensed person. A reasonable insurer wouldn't do that because the statute doesn't let you do that. That was unreasonable, and that can create a duty. CCC also allowed Greentree to overcharge its insurance by $33 a month, knowing full well that this was going on. Reasonable insurers don't allow their insurance to be ripped off every month for year after year after year when they know what's going on.
That How did they know what was going on? How did they know that was going on?
CCC's insurance agent, Southern States, Doug Bailey was the contact person there that CCC worked with, and Doug Bailey said he had a conversation with Greentree in which they discussed Greentree's overcharging. So CCC, the agent of Southern States, the agents of CCC knew overcharging was going on, and Doug Bailey knew that this was common in the industry, and this happens a lot. There's many cases that you can find online where trucking companies are overcharging their truckers. It's replete across the country. The lower court did find that we met our burden in proving.
But how did CCC know that was going on?
Well, Southern States is CCC's agent, and the lower court found that that conduct and that knowledge is imputed up to CCC.
How did the lower court deal with the? This is summary judgment, correct?
Right.
So did the lower court go wrong in considering the facts in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, or do you agree that there were no material facts at issue?
I think there were many material facts at issue, but the lower court found there was no duty. CCC had no duty to its ultimate insured. The lower court...
Does the duty depend upon the facts of this case?
I think it does, because a duty can be imposed based upon what a reasonable insurer would do under the same circumstance. So you have to look at the facts of the case and look to what would a reasonable insurer do under those facts. In this case, Judge Macy said there are no duties that were violated that are contained within the insurance contract. Well, there's all kinds of duties that insurers are required to uphold outside of an insurance contract. Some of those, of course, are statutes. They're, of course, held to statutes. Statutes don't have to be mentioned in an insurance contract before insurers have to abide by them. And there's common law, and there's what the reasonable insurer would do in the same situation, all which impose duties.
You know, I had the impression that you briefed this more as questions of law. Maybe I'm wrong. Correct me right now, but I didn't recall you saying the error here was, and it needs to be remanded because there's a genuine issue of disputed fact that needs to be resolved. Am I mistaken? I could be.
I think it's a mixed question of law and fact.
Well, did you brief the question, following up on Justice Myers's question, did you argue in the briefs that there's a question of fact here that requires reversal?
We did, Your Honor. We included excerpts from our expert reports, which said...
Okay, I remember that, yeah.
Which said a reasonable person under the standard of care would do this, this, and that, and that has to do with facts. The question of duty is a question of law, but at some point it's mixed because to create a duty, you look to what a reasonable person would do. So we do have to look to the facts here, but ultimately duty is a question of law, as this court has held. There's also a public policy issue here. To uphold the lower court's decision, we would be saying that insurance companies can avoid all licensure laws if they just structure their insurance scheme just right. If they create an insurance scheme that delegates all responsibility to someone else, they don't have to follow up to see whether that's been done. They don't have to worry about whether they're abiding by licensure laws because it's a group insurance policy. And that would be saying CCC has no responsibility to insurers when they know insureds are being ripped off by the person they've delegated responsibility to. There's a strong public policy against allowing group insurance insurers from avoiding statutory law.
Your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hall, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. Again, I'm Ron Hall. I'm representing Continental Casualty Company in this appeal. This is a case where a gentleman receives the benefit of a group insurance policy and collect over $104,000 in benefits, collected the full policy benefits in disability benefits plus medical benefits, and now is still trying to hold Continental Casualty to some duty to have done something more than required by the policy or to have paid him more than is required by the policy. As I understand, there are two theories. One of these is the just like theory that Ms. Bird, the Greentree employee, told Mr. Delka allegedly that it's just like workers' comp. And so what he's really trying to do is say, I'll keep the $104,000 under Continental Casualty's policy, but also I want work comp benefits, and I want Continental Casualty to pay me work comp benefits as well as what they paid under the policy. And the other theory is that is the overcharging theory, where Greentree, Mr. Delka's own employer or master, overcharges him and keeps the overcharge itself. And there is a reason for that in theory, but anyway, they keep the excess amount, do not pay it to CCC. And so Continental Casualty has not received any of this excess amount that's charged by Greentree, and Continental Casualty has not paid Greentree any compensation, directly or indirectly, for enrolling, basically, its independent contractors under this policy.
What is the duty of your company to the insurer?
The duty is governed by the terms of the group insurance policy.
But what if he never saw the policy?
The duty is still the group insurance policy. It's not unusual, as Justice Center was pointed out, that in the employment context that we all have coverage under various group policies, and we may never see those policies until it's time to make a claim. I've never looked at my health insurance policy or even asked to do that. I would if it was time to make a claim. When it was time to make a claim, Mr. Delka was readily able to determine what the policy provided for, and Continental Casualty paid him all the benefits. I don't know if I addressed your question, Justice Meyer-Henry.
So that's really kind of the difference that we're talking here. You're saying it's contract, bound by the contract terms, and the appellants are saying that it's not bound by the contract terms. It's something outside the contract.
Right, and I think that is the difference or the argument. We have case law in this state that says that obviously the question of a duty is a question of law. The question, the interpretation of an insurance contract is a question of law. And then in the context of insurance and our bad faith jurisprudence, the court handed down a decision last week that said in the workers' comp context, this is the Hine versus Acuity case from last week, that in the workers' comp context, you can't have bad faith where the unless there's a bad faith refusal to pay the policy benefits under the policy. And this case, the case before the court now, is governed by Pennsylvania law. And the Pennsylvania case law says there is no common law, there's no common law action for bad faith in Pennsylvania against an insurer. There is only a statutory action for bad faith, which plaintiff never pled in its any of its four complaints. And the definition, again, under Pennsylvania case law, is bad faith is unreasonable or vexatious refusal to pay policy benefits, or it can be to a failure to perform some other duty under the insurance contract. But plaintiff, Mr. Delka, as far as I can tell, has not identified any failure of Continental Casualty to provide him any benefits under the terms of the policy. And once you go beyond that, the overcharging issue, we're really in small claims territory here. Mr. Delka was apparently charged $396 more than the premiums that were actually remitted to Continental Casualty. And Green Tea kept that $396.
Why do you say we're in small claims territory?
Well, because it's probably irrelevant, Justice Sabers, but I'm saying that once you go beyond this just like theory or looking at the overcharging theory, they're talking about $396 that Green Tea kept, not Continental Casualty. So I'm saying it's trivial.
It's de minimis.
Yes. But that's really not part of our argument.
How about the general principle, though, that, you can delegate duties, but you can't delegate responsibilities? And isn't that what your client is asking us to do, is to enforce the fact here they delegate these duties and yet write off all responsibility for their actions? Can they do that?
Well, I don't think that's what we're asking the court to do. We're asking, I don't think Continental Casualty is asking to be excused from any of its duties under that insurance contract. And this really has, I think this has to be viewed in
the... Are they asking to be excused from their duties as an insurance company? If let's assume just for a minute that Green Tea is... Let's use a James Bond term, let's say he's a double agent, okay? He's an agent in part for the person sending the premiums, and he's an agent in part for Continental Casualty Company. And if he's a double agent, then isn't CCC still responsible for the responsibilities that Green Tea failed to maintain?
Not under Pennsylvania law, and I don't think there's any dispute in this case that it's governed by Pennsylvania law. And the United States Supreme Court decided in 1937, in applying Pennsylvania law in the Bozeman case, that in the context of group insurance, the employer or the group policyholder acts as the agent of the insured or the employees, and not as the agent of the insurer. And that's been decided by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, the Pennsylvania Inferior Appellate Courts, the Middle District of the U.S. District Court for Pennsylvania, and then as recently as January 29 of this year, in this McBride case that's in our supplemental brief, the Eastern District Court for the District of Pennsylvania affirmed the same rule because the real policyholder is the employer, and he's procuring this insurance for the benefit of his employees as a goodwill and a lower cost insurance than would be otherwise obtainable, that the employer is acting as the real agent of the insureds, or the employees. And so as a matter of law, Pennsylvania law, CCC can't have any duties beyond, well, I mean, they can't be they can't be bound by what Green Tree does, obviously. And in a related vein, when the appellant talks about trying to impute the knowledge of Southern States, this insurance broker for Green Tree, if you're trying to impute knowledge that there might have been some overcharging in the industry or something like that, if you're trying to impute that up to Continental Casualty, then you also have to impute Green Tree's knowledge as Delka's agent under Pennsylvania law. That has to be imputed to Mr. Delka. So he has the same, well, he has more knowledge of what's going on if it's a matter of constructive or vicarious knowledge. He's responsible for what his agent is doing. And actually, the enrollment form that he signed and gave to Green Tree said, I assume complete responsibility for knowing the amount of my premiums. And the independent contractor agreement that he signed said he was responsible for, if he doesn't have workers' comp, he's responsible for making sure that he has this occupational accident coverage. If he doesn't, Green Tree's going to provide it for him. So I don't see any way you get around that principle of agency law in Pennsylvania. Appellant has attempted to argue that there are some administrative regulations that would change that. And these are in Chapter 37.1 of the Pennsylvania Administrative Code. And they're trying to say that the definition of agent for licensing purposes is so broad that it would include what Green Tree was doing here. We don't agree that an insurance agency in Pennsylvania can or that there's any evidence they intended to overrule 70 years of legal precedent. And obviously there's been a case in 2007, and there's a case cited in brief in 2005 reaffirming this principle that in the group context the employer acts as the insured agent. But if you look at those administrative regulations, they don't say what appellant wants you to have them say. There is a definition of broker in those regulations. These are the Pennsylvania regulations, and it means a person, partnership, or corporation, not an officer, nor appointed as an agent of an entity who, for compensation, acts or aids in obtaining insurance for a person other than oneself. And I don't know if I was reading too fast. But then the same regulations say that when a broker is authorized by the client to secure insurance, the broker is considered the legal agent of the insured, of the client. I'm sorry. So taking their theory of the case, Green Tree was not an officer of Continental Casualty, was not appointed as an agent of Continental Casualty. And Green Tree, for compensation it apparently kept for itself, acted or aids in obtaining insurance for Delka. Therefore, again, they were a broker, they're Delka's agent, which is completely consistent with that long line of Pennsylvania case authority.
On the direct liability issue, the point that was made at the beginning of the argument today, is there an issue of fact about whether Charlene Byrd did or did not get the certificates? Because as I understand the record, there is a Pennsylvania statute that would have required CCC to deliver this to Green Tree. And if she says it was never delivered, do we have a dispute of fact about that?
There is no issue of fact on that in this record, Your Honor. I meant to actually address that first, but this is something that I found in preparing for argument last week and called appellant's counsel to discuss. The appellant's reply brief has an appendix to it that is excerpts from Charlene Byrd's deposition. Those excerpts, those pages in that appendix, were never filed with the court. The Byrd deposition was never filed as part of the clerk's certified record, and those excerpts of the of her deposition were never filed in any pleading in connection in that record. And so we made the motion for summary judgment as to the third amended complaint last summer, and plaintiff did file a response to that with attached excerpts of the record that they wanted to call the court's attention to. There were some pages from Charlene Byrd's depositions, but they were not those pages, and they did not discuss that issue. So we have a real problem here that appellant is asking this court to consider something that's not part of the record on appeal.
Assume we don't agree with you and that we think that is part of the record. How would you answer the issue then?
Sure. Well, what Ms. Byrd's testimony really was is, I don't remember what I got. If I got anything, I delivered it I would have delivered it to the truckers. So it's sort of equivocal, or it doesn't say that she never got any certificates. It's basically she doesn't remember. So the duty of Continental Casualty under the policy and under most state laws for a group policy is to prepare and deliver the certificates to the holder. That's to Greentree. So the record we have is affidavits from Southern States Agency, deposition testimony from Southern States Agency, Greentree's own agent, saying the certificates were delivered to Greentree. We have sworn testimony from a third party, or a master underwriter, another agent basically saying the certificates were prepared and delivered. And so we have sworn testimony from multiple witnesses saying the certificates and cards were delivered to Greentree. And all we have from Ms. Byrd, which is not part of the record, is saying, well, I don't remember. If I got them, I would have given them.
If the certificates were not delivered, how would that change the complexion of this case?
If the certificates were not delivered to Greentree?
Right.
I think it would be immaterial because Mr. Delkin never relied on anything he got from Greentree or CCC. He didn't see any certificates. He got the benefits that were provided for in the certificate, so I would think it'd be a no harm, no foul. That's my view of it. There was argument concerning violation of statutes that I really want to address. So we respectfully disagree with that. There are no violations of any South Dakota or Pennsylvania statutes involved in this case. And some of these statutes that appellant referred to were actually brought up for the first time, I believe, in the reply brief. I didn't have a chance to brief that back, but the transcript of the argument before Judge Macy last July, I cited a number of statutes, South Dakota and Pennsylvania statutes, so they are part of the record in that transcript. The first one is Pennsylvania statute. It's 40 Pennsylvania statute, section 310.3, and this is who is required to have a license to be an insurance producer. There are specific exceptions in that. The following persons are not insurance producers for purposes of this act. And subsection 4 is a person that secures and furnishes written information for group life insurance, group blanket accident, et cetera, performs administrative services related to the enrollment of individuals under plans, issues certificates, or otherwise assists in administering plans, performs administrative services, et cetera. So basically, there's an exception for this very situation. And there's another exception for employers who are engaged in the administration or operation of an employee benefits program. And as Justice Zinner pointed out, if that weren't the law, insurers would have a terrible burden and employers would have a terrible burden. Every employer in the country that provides benefits to employees would have to have an agent on staff to explain or available to explain the policy to every employee and somehow make sure that they get all the information straight. And You know, that's simply not the law. There's also, this, it's the same rule under South Dakota statutes, current statutes, SDCL 58-30-4, and it's the 30-144, again, exempts persons administering group policies or employers administering benefits plans from the licensing requirements. And there's another statute, SDCL 58-30-142, that defines agent of insured as any insurance producer or person who secures compensation from an insured or insurance customer only and receives no compensation directly or indirectly from an insurer for a transaction with that insured or insurance customer. So again, we have South Dakota statute saying if Greentree is only taking money from Delca and receives no commission directly or indirectly from Continental Casualty, they are Delca's agent. Their Greentree's knowledge has to be imputed to Delca, not the other way around. I see my time is about up. Are there any final questions?
If not, thank you, Mr. Hall.
Thank you.
Ms. Frankenstein, you have 10 minutes.
The question came to opposing counsel regarding delegation of duties. Can an insurance company take the duties that are imposed upon them by common law or by statute and delegate away their duty when they delegate away responsibility? This court has held no, you can't. Under the case Eldridge versus Northwest GR Mutual Insurance, which was a 1974 case, this court held that delegation of duties do not relieve an insurer of its statutory or common law duties. The Court of Appeals court in Arizona, Walter versus Simmons, held it with a little more definity. They said, an insurer who owes the legally imposed duty of good faith to its insureds cannot escape liability for a breach of that duty by delegating it to another, regardless of how the relationship of that third party is characterized. That's what we have here, Your Honors. We have an insurance company washing their hands of all responsibility, all duties imposed by statute, common law, and what a reasonable person would do under the negligence standard by delegating their duties to someone else who screwed it up. Now they want to claim that because they delegated it away, they'd never had such a duty in the first place. Opposing counsel argued that...
You know, before you go to that, I wasn't clear from the briefs. Are you suggesting direct liability on all 9 causes of action?
We are, Your Honor. We believe that CCC created the atmosphere, created the situation which allowed Greentree to perpetrate fraud.
Well, I mean, for instance, like deceit, you know, there doesn't seem to be any dispute here that there was never any conversation or representations made between CCC and Delca. So, I mean, if I don't see how there can be direct liability there.
Deceit can be created by an omission as well. We've got South Dakota case law that says deceit isn't just the overt act of speaking, it's also keeping quiet when you must speak. We have the alternate concealment of facts in case the court were to dismiss the deceit, but I do believe deceit allows that omission of speaking when you must. Opposing counsel stated that the law of Pennsylvania has to go back to the case law. Well, we've got regulations on the books in Pennsylvania since 1994 which reverse the body of case law that's come out of Pennsylvania. Now, CCC has pointed to 2 decisions that have come down from Pennsylvania courts since 1994 when those regs came on the books. In both situations, the court was not given citations to regs. Regs were not argued at all. Now, we cannot construe regs in a manner that render them meaningless. And that's
does that mean Pennsylvania regulations may not carry the force of law?
I have not seen anything to that effect. Instead, I've seen the Department of Insurance in a statute allow the commission or the Department Division of Insurance in Pennsylvania to create administrative regs, and I believe they have the same force and effect as statutes.
Well, it would be highly unusual if these regs turn 70 years of case law on its head, like Mr. Hall said, that subsequent cases didn't address that issue and just simply ignored it?
What I believe would be unusual, Your Honor, is if we had a set of regulations that were just ignored as if they were meaningless, because regulations are put on the book to be enforced. And this court should give force and effect to regulations, even though there are cases that don't discuss the regulations and find something other than what the regs require you to find.
Well, you know, on that point, though, the regulations appear to be adopted pursuant to a statute where the Pennsylvania legislature delegated to the insurance agency out there to regulate the licensure of agents. And it's hard for me to see how that also included the power to abrogate, you know, the common law of when an agency relationship exists, as it had been determined in Pennsylvania.
The regulations in Pennsylvania say you're an agent if you solicit insurance, apply for insurance on behalf of somebody else, offer insurance, deliver insurance policies, collect premiums, or send those premiums on to the insurance company. To do any of those things, you must have an agent's license.
No, I understand that. I understand that. What I'm asking, I'm going back a couple steps and asking, did the legislature really delegate that power to the insurance agency out there to do this? Because the statutes at issue only involve licensure, who had to be licensed.
I recall seeing a statute when I began my research on this that did delegate the administrative agency to take that power and create regulations to enforce the
licensure. There's clearly a statute on that. So the question is, does licensure include the power to abrogate the common law of Pennsylvania on when an agency relationship exists and who it exists between?
How can Greentree not be an agent in doing these things that they've been delegated to do when it needs an agent's license to do them? How can we say that licensure law is something different? How can we say Greentree isn't an agent when they need an agent's license to do the things they're doing? I don't see how we can separate the licensing laws from the rest of the laws, and they aren't so separated in the code. They all fall under the general title of insurance. There's no separate category defining agent in some other way for some other matter. It's defined under the general provisions section of the insurance code, and I think we have to give force and effect to those regulations. To ignore them is to render them meaningless. The Supreme Court has said the first place to look is the statute, and the last place to look is the statute if it's unambiguous. And we've got some clear statutes requiring agents to be licensed if they do certain things, and Greentree has done those certain things, and they should be deemed an agent that needs an agent's license. South Dakota has addressed this issue in one case that I can find. It's Kent versus Lyon, which is a 1996 decision. In that case, Kent was a licensed insurance agent representing a group of bankers associated for the purpose of finding cheap insurance. Kent found insurance. The policy changed, and Kent failed to relay that information on to the associated bankers. The court found that in that case, and Kent, by the way, was delivering premiums, collecting premiums, calculating premiums. Under the facts of that case, this court found that Kent was an agent of both the insurer as well as the associated bankers. So we've got South Dakota case law that doesn't require the agent to be exclusive of one party or the other. They can be a dual agent under South Dakota case law. And I think that dovetails nicely with the regulations in Pennsylvania, where Pennsylvania says, we're going to deem you an agent if you engage in certain responsibilities. Opposing counsel talked about the case law that applies. It has not been determined what law applies to the relationship between Ted Delka and CCC. Ted Delka entered into a contract with Greentree, and that contract says Pennsylvania law applies. CCC and Greentree probably are regulated under Pennsylvania law because Greentree is in Pennsylvania. But we have had no decision, and there's no contract determining what law applies to Greentree and CCC's relationship. We've argued both states' laws, and we believe that we're entitled to a reversal under either state's law. We think the public policy is the same in Pennsylvania as it is here, that we can't allow insurance companies to wash their hands of all duties imposed by statutes, common law, the standard in the industry, by delegating duties to an unlicensed person, which is against a violation of statute, and allow this entity delegated with these responsibilities to defraud their insurers, know about it, and let it continue to go on. I think we need to take a strong public policy stance against allowing insurance companies to do that. Mr. Hall said that Ted Delka wouldn't have done anything differently if he had received a certificate. He had asked for a copy of the insurance policy twice. Greentree did not give him a policy. Of course they didn't give him a policy, because if he got one, he'd know how much the premium cost actually was, and he'd know he was being defrauded. He had asked for it twice. He didn't receive one. Pennsylvania law, the statute, requires CCC to distribute certificates at least to the holder. We've got a question of fact as to whether that was done. And we can't say that Ted wouldn't have done something different. He was never given the option. He was told he was buying workers' comp for $125 a month. After he's injured, they send him a copy of the policy and certificate for the first time. He gets a phone call saying, your medical benefits expire after 2 years. Your disability expires after 5 years. For the first time, Ted Delka realizes he didn't purchase something like workers' comp. In fact, it was something far short. Then after litigation ensues, we find out he was being defrauded $50 a month because Greentree was not only overcharging OAI, but also Bobtail Insurance. CCC didn't supply the Bobtail Insurance, but we have significant defrauding going on at the hands of Greentree. CCC created that possibility for trucking companies to allow this fraud, this skimming, to occur. And we
think that's... Your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have one question about that. Sure. You know, I didn't understand. I maybe misunderstood the Bobtail Insurance. Because it was written on in the briefs, but are you suggesting it's really not material because that was provided by somebody other than Greentree?
That's right, Your
Honor.
So
we don't need to really concern ourselves with any issues surrounding the Bobtail Insurance?
You probably don't. It just indicates that it's replete in the industry.
Thank you. We're being recessed.